Welcome to Cryptopreneurs Radio, brought to you live by the Tough Talk Radio Network. Cryptopreneurs Radio is a community of entrepreneurs who strive to affect change and increase the public acceptance of cryptocurrency. We are the miners, entrepreneurs, and innovators getting involved in the evolution of digital currencies. Now, here's your host, Tony Gambone and Linda Ballesteros.
All right, welcome to the show. My name is Tony Gambone, and I am here with my co-host, Linda Ballesteros, this morning. And Linda, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Tony. Looking forward to it.
Now, as many of you know, if you follow the show, Linda's in Portland, and I'm in Houston. And today, our guest, a gentleman by the name of Adam Ernest, is in Virginia. So it's crazy, the power of the internet, what we can do, how we can have conversations, build relationships, and get educated just from one little instrument. It's just crazy. It's either your phone or your laptop, your tablet, your desktop. The whole world is connected. And today we're going to be talking about something that we've talked about a little bit in the past, but this time in a little bit different direction about how blockchain technology is being used. And for those of you who don't know blockchain technology, this is a good show for you to listen to because you're going to learn out more about it. I'm a little familiar with it, and I've been doing a show for 3 months, and I've done the show so I can learn more about it, and I'm real interested today to see all the little nuggets I'm going to be able to take away from it. So anyway, Linda, what's going on in Portland?
Well, it's raining. That's nothing new because it does always rain here, Tony. But, you know, we've turned the corner, and it's really things are blooming. We just recently had the Tulip Festival, and it's gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. So, folks, if you've never been to Portland, you know, be sure to come during the spring and summer. It's gorgeous that time of the year.
Well, you know, here in Houston, we just had an incredible rainstorm. And I think they said it was the second worst rainstorm for water and flooding that they've had in, I don't know, a long time. And I know that yesterday, or maybe it was 2 days ago when it rained real hard, I was kind of locked into the neighborhood. We couldn't get out. It was just flooded. And when I say flooded, I'm talking about some of the streets had 4 or 5 feet of water on it. It's kind of hard to comprehend that, but it was a good day to stay home. And so what I want to talk about is when something like that happens, what goes on in your mind when you're on a road and you're driving, maybe it's not even light out yet, and you're trying to go to work, and you know it's been raining all night, you hit a puddle, next thing you know, your vehicle stalls, and you're in water that's, you know, thigh high or calf high. Maybe it's up to your knees. Didn't realize it because you're just motoring along, just like we do every day in our world. We're just motoring along. It's a habit. We just get out there. We do what we do. We never see anything other than the norm. Well, here in Houston, that norm caused 7 deaths in cars. People drowned it. And I know people in other parts of the country are saying, well, why did they just drive into it like that? Well, the fact of the matter is it might have been up to the halfway up their tire when they realized that their car wouldn't go any further. And when they got out, within a matter of 5 to 10 minutes, water came so quickly that it washed them down along with the vehicles. So one of the things I just want to touch base on is that we're very sorry for the people who had loss of lives and their families here in Houston. But the thing of it is, don't assume that you know that people should have did this or people should have done that. Don't assume that until you look at yourself and look at what you've done in your business and in your lifetime and some of the mistakes that you made that didn't turn out to be tragic mistakes, but were inches from it. So as I watch the news and I hear people from all over the states or, you know, contact me and saying, hey, you know, that's really crazy. How did that all take place? Well, we all know. We don't know what we don't know. And that's what's cool about doing Cryptopreneurs Radio Show. We don't know what we don't know about cryptocurrency. And today we don't know anything about, a lot of us don't know how that the, you know, voting platform can be used through blockchain technology. So our future is moving forward with or without us. And my point to this whole long conversation is that we need to pay attention to things that we're not aware of. We need to learn more, because as we move forward, I'll be 60 in June, so I have to learn from the young people. And by learning from the young people, it will allow me to keep working, because they're going to be the next people purchasing. So what's going on in our world? What's going on with our currency? What's going on with the voting? I mean, I think everybody's heard of Donald Trump one way or another, smile or frown. But what's going on? This morning I got a text message that showed me an image of Trump coin. That's kind of scary. I don't know whether they're going to have his hair on the picture, but anyway. So, Lynn, what do you think?
Well, you know, Tony, I think what that tells us is that even someone like Donald Trump, and we all know that Sir Richard Branson already has his own coin, and Bill Gates. And so everybody is those that are the thought leaders, and those that catch on to those trends that turn into something that is that makes a huge change in our everyday life. They're jumping into this. So we need to take a really good look, folks, because if they're getting into it, then you might want to look at it closely, because they may be getting into it for a different reason, and certainly at a different level. And it doesn't mean that you have to go out and create your own coin. But the reason, you know, Tony keeps saying, the reason that we created this show is to bring education to you. So just to broaden your mind and be open to something that you know nothing about. That's where we all started. And if someone tells you that they know everything about blockchain or digital currency, you need to turn around and run, because nobody knows everything about this. We are all in a learning curve. We're in different areas of the learning curve, and maybe we don't want to learn everything. But just keep in mind, start learning something about this, because it is the way of the future.
Yeah. Yeah. And so let me just give out a little bit of the details for the show today. For the new listeners, you can call into the show, join the conversation, ask questions, or just tell us we're crazy. The number is 347-989-1363. You can also find us on crypto-panoorsradio.com, or go to toughtalkradionetwork.com. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, all the social media sites. You could either type in Linda Ballesteros, and that's 1B, 2Ls, E-S-T-E-R-O-S, Ballesteros, okay, or Tony Gambone, or Tough Talk Radio Network, or Cryptopreneurs. This can be found on Facebook as well. Stop by, give us a like, let us know what's going on in your world. If you've heard of this, if you haven't heard of it, what you want to learn more about, or if you're an expert, we'd love to have you on the show, like we're having Adam on the show today. So, Lynn, we're going to take a commercial break. When we come back, we'll bring up Adam Ernest, and we're going to learn about how a secure online voting platform for greater election transparency is being done by using blockchain technology. Now, that whole statement that I just said there, I'm lost. I don't know what that means. I know that you go vote, you know, and in an election, and it's over. And some people say it's incorrect, they didn't do it right, or whatever it is. Okay. And this is, from my understanding, there's going to be a way that it can be legitimately counted. Nothing shady can happen from it. At least that's my understanding. What is yours on this?
Well, you know, Tony, I tell you, we've got several elections in the past that we all kind of walked away scratching our heads saying, did that person really win that election? Because it was rather botched up. So if I'm really interested to hear how Adam explains this and how it can be more secure and more accurate than what we're currently using.
Yes. I'm excited to do that. So let's do this. Let's take a commercial break. When we come back, we'll bring Adam up, and we'll get the learning started. So we'll be right back after this short break.
Did you know that an estimated 52 million Americans listened to internet radio in the last month, or that weekly internet radio audience has increased 60% over the last year, and that more than 8 in 10 people are online from any location. Tough Talk Radio Network is a company dedicated to providing a platform that allows opportunities for guests, hosts, and sponsors to market themselves through the internet radio medium where they can be heard by millions. To find out how Tough Talk Radio Network can help you, go to toughtalkradionetwork.com.
You've written a great novel, and now it's time to sit back and roll in the dough. Not. In today's saturated world of book publishing, an author must know how to sell their book. At the Celebration of Authors event, we have created 12 fun-filled, information-packed seminars to help give you a valuable boost in selling your book. Join us on April 30th in Austin, Texas, as we celebrate writing and marketing. To learn more, go to txauthors.com and click on COAD.
Okay, welcome back to Cryptopreneurs Radio. My name is Tony Gambone. I'm here today with my co-host, Linda Ballesteros. And as I mentioned in the beginning of the show, Linda's in Portland. I'm in Houston. And our guest today, Adam Ernest, is in Virginia. The power of the internet is just incredible. What we're going to learn today more about the power of that internet and what it can help do. So without wasting any time, I want to introduce our guest today, a gentleman by the name of Adam Ernest, and he is the co-founder and CEO of Follow My Vote. Adam, welcome to the show.
Tony, thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to be on today.
It's all our pleasure. We're very thankful when people take time out to come and share information and education with others in our listening base. So, Adam, before I get Linda in here and start quizzing you, I'd like to find out a little bit about you. Where are you from? Where are you calling in from? Where are you from originally?
Sure. So I was actually born in Evansville, Indiana, in 1982. So I am a millennial. My father joined the military when I was very young, so we bounced around the country quite a bit. Yeah, I moved around every few years. I've lived in Illinois, Texas, Nebraska, Virginia. I spent a few years in Europe. Actually went to Virginia Tech here in Blacksburg, Virginia. Got involved in the internet marketing industry. Was for about 10 or 12 years working down in South Florida. I recently moved back to focus on Follow My Vote and really do what I can to lift this business off the ground and bring a really solid solution to the world.
So when you say you got involved in internet marketing, explain that a little bit.
Sure. Well, I graduated from Virginia Tech in 2004 with a marketing management degree. I moved in 2005. I moved down to South Florida. Now, I always kind of fancied myself as a madman kind of guy, you know, with, you know, sitting around the boardroom, being really creative and coming up with branding concepts and print and traditional media. You know, but at the time there weren't too many opportunities to get involved. Luckily for me, down in South Florida, there was an internet marketing agency that was just really getting started. The whole industry was really in its infancy back then. No one really knew what they were doing, and which was great because it kind of got me. I was able to kind of get in on the ground floor with virtually no experience. And me and a handful of other people worked for a company called MediaWiz, and we built up this agency. You know, from the ground up, I became the kind of backbone of the organization, grew with the company. You know, I got promoted 5 and 6 times, you know, in a row, and really hit a ceiling at that organization. We sold our company to Matomi Media Group based out of Tel Aviv, Israel. And at that point in time, I said, you know what, you know, I've always been an entrepreneur at heart. You know, I started my own lawn mowing business when I was 10 years old. And I still used to sell candy out of my backpack to kids in middle school. They used to call me the candy man. So, you know, I had it in my blood and was waiting for the right time to take that leap of faith and start my own company. And it was right around the time where government approval was at an all-time low, and there was an issue in Washington. People were pointing at Washington. Literally, the government shut down, I think it was in October of 2011, where, you know, our, you know, Democrats and Republicans really couldn't compromise on anything, and ultimately the government shut down because we couldn't pass a budget. And I said, well, we got to fix that problem. And I dreamt up an idea for an application to hold our elected officials more accountable. And then moved back to Blacksburg, found out about blockchain technology, and was like, whoa, wait a minute. This is a way that we can leverage blockchain technology to build the world's first, you know, end-to-end verifiable voting system. And to me, that was really important because as a millennial, you know, the first election I ever voted in was the election of 2000. And, you know, most people in the United States are very, very aware of the presidential election of 2000. It was Bush and Gore, you know, and it really came down to Florida. It was a very controversial election, you know, most controversial in history. You know, at the end of the day, the Supreme Court stopped the recount, you know, and I saw a red flag go up. I said, wait a minute, our government was going about investigating the truth to figure out who actually won this election, and we stopped it. And to me, I said, wait a minute, there's no transparency in our elections. The elections happen in a black box, and that's a problem. And I think the American people deserve a way to know, you know, to be able to verify, you know, independently verify that our elections are accurate. And when I was 18 years old, you know, I didn't know how I was going to solve that problem, but I banked it. And like I said, after going to school, graduating Virginia Tech, going down to South Florida, getting involved in internet marketing, only to quit, come back to Virginia Tech and start my own company, did I realize blockchain technology is that solution. And, you know, we have been grinding for the last 2 years now trying to bring a blockchain-based voting solution to the world.
Well, Adam, I'd like to say thanks so much for being on the show today because you're bringing a different approach to how people can or how the blockchain can be used. And I think that's important for everybody to kind of broaden their mind and realize that it's not just cryptocurrency. It's not just Bitcoin. It can be used for so many different things. Now, you really skimmed across some really great points in your introduction just a minute ago. So let's go back and talk about that just a little bit because you mentioned the election, the Florida election. So currently, describe to our listeners, currently, what are some of the downfalls of the system that we are using and relying upon to put our elected officials into office? What are some of those downfalls that we may not even know are putting the wrong people in office, not the ones that were actually voted in?
Sure. I'd like to start right off the bat, and that's a great question. So right off the bat, I want to focus on absentee ballots. Because right now, the majority of states allow people to vote by mail. And they vote absentee. They're allowed to vote early, and they're allowed to cast their vote by mail. What people don't realize is, statistically within the United States, 4% of mail is lost.
Wow.
So when you have a country like, you know, when you have a state like Oregon, you know, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but in Oregon, you do all your voting by mail, right?
Right.
So 4% of those votes are getting lost. And that's a staggering statistic if you think about it. I mean, especially when majority of elections are decided by just a few percentage points. So that's one very big issue, is that we are already allowing to vote by mail, and not only is mail lost, you know, in transit, but it's really not secure. You know, if you think about it, you know, people can easily open up envelopes, and you know, people's really right to privacy isn't really secured. You know, when you're talking about voting via mail, because someone can always open up that envelope. They can always see, you know, your name right there alongside who you voted for. And I think that's a concern for a lot of people. So voting by mail is a big issue for those reasons. But also, you know, and there are a lot of states where we do a lot of electronic voting, you know, where we have these voting machines, whether they're made by, you know, Dominion Systems, you know, the Diebold, Sequoia, or, you know, Virginia, you have the Winvote voting system. You know, back in May of last year, as recently as May of last year, Governor McAuliffe, Governor Ken McAuliffe here in Virginia, had to decertify the Winvote voting machines because they were found to be extremely vulnerable. There was a study that went live that said that, you know, someone was able to go to a centralized polling location with a laptop, just a basic laptop. They were able to hack into the wireless network of the of that centralized polling location, and from there, hack into a Winvote voting machine within a few minutes' time. And, you know, the worst part about it was they used it was so easy to crack the voting system, they used username admin, password ABCDEF.
Oh, wow.
You know? So, I mean, you have to sit there and scratch your head for a second and say, did they even try to secure these voting systems? It was almost like that could have intentionally been left open so, you know, people could hack and manipulate, you know, the votes inside these voting machines. And that's a whole other thing is that, you know, these voting machines have one centralized database where they're storing data. So if anyone were to hack it, people can hack in. They can change thousands of votes that way in one fell swoop and no one would be the wiser, you know. And so that's a big issue with our electronic voting machines. And I can list out numerous cases in which these voting machines have been, we've found vulnerabilities with them and had to consequently decertify them in various states throughout the country. Not only that, I mean, ultimately, you know, we another issue is that we put a lot of faith and trust in human beings to make sure that our vote totals are accurately input into the systems that are responsible for reporting our vote totals to the election authorities, you know. And let me clarify on that. So, for instance, here in Montgomery County in Virginia, you know, ultimately once an election has been completed, you know, you have the voter registrar in Montgomery County literally going into a computer and hand keying in the vote totals. And
wow.
You know, and submitting them to the Secretary of State. So, you know, they you know, not to say that you know our registrar voters you know is corrupt and would intentionally put in an inaccurate, but hey, he could easily make a mistake. You know, he could fast finger the total, add an extra zero or leave off one or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and ultimately have a big impact on the outcome of the election, you know, and ultimately, you know, I do like to think that all of, you know, our election officials, you know, can be trusted, but at the same time, you know, if there is an opportunity, if the system itself is vulnerable to human error and or human corruption, you know, what's the saying? You know, whatever can happen will happen. You know, eventually there's going to be someone within the system that is capable of being corrupted, and there is a lot of money and influence in politics, and you know, people are going to great lengths to ensure that, you know, their candidate of choice wins. So because
so
there is
Adam,
a human element involved.
Right.
What?
Was it looking at some of these deficiencies that made you say there's got to be a better way? And that's where, you know, so many inventions come from is just by that question, there's got to be a better way. So is that what spurred you to look for something different and then to actually investigate how blockchain could be used for that?
Well, you know, it really wasn't. Although that's what, you know, I firmly believe today. You know, you know, for all those reasons that I just mentioned, I mean, it's obvious that, you know, the system itself is broken, and there's got to be a better way. But really, what drove me to want to solve this problem really dates back to the 2000 election, and not knowing whether or not my vote even reached the ballot box, you know, because I was actually overseas in Germany at the time. So I had to vote absentee. I had to vote via mail. So I was left wondering, hey, did my vote actually get there? And if it did
right.
it get counted correctly? And so it was a very personal thing for me, saying, you know, if I'm going to participate in this democracy, if I'm going to take the time out to study the candidates and really formulate an informed opinion on who my vote should go to, I want to make sure at the end of the day it actually goes to that person. And so it was a really personal quest for me to make sure that I had a way to verify that my vote was counted and counted correctly. You know, cast as intended and counted as cast. And so I really wanted to solve that problem of the 2000 elections. And you know, when we sat down and decided, okay, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, we talked about some of the shortcomings of our current system. How do you see that blockchain maybe resolve some of those? Because they always say that if you find the solution to a current problem, then that's where you have identified a product that is going to do really well. So with the blockchain, How can that overcome some of the problems and the obstacles that you just described earlier of our current system?
Sure, that's a really great question. So let's first define the problems. Okay, so from our perspective, you know, the two big problems are the lack of transparency in our election, and the other is the lack of security within our election system. And so the blockchain has the ability to solve both of those problems. And if you think about it, blockchain is, so let's talk about the first problem, lack of transparency. So the blockchain is a publicly verifiable database, right? So all data that's stored on a blockchain is publicly verifiable. Anyone, any single individual can independently review data stored on the blockchain. You know, so if we were to cast votes, we were to broadcast votes onto the blockchain, this vote data would be publicly verifiable. So not only could, using our system, can you vote in an election and follow your vote into the ballot box and confirm with your own eyes that your vote has been stored safely and securely on the blockchain, but you can literally audit the results of an entire election going one by one. If you don't believe the results that are being reported, you know, by, you know, at the top of, you know, our system, you can literally go through the ballot box one by one and count them yourself to ensure that the results that are being reported are true and accurate. You know, we're able to do this without compromising on people's privacy, right? Because a big, big issue is, you know, if you're going to start putting vote data on the blockchain, well, does that mean people are going to know how I voted in an election? And the answer to that question is no, not with our system, because we actually have innovated. You know, we sat back and thought about, okay, if you're going to build a verifiable voting system, okay, how much you go about doing that? And, you know, we obviously realized, okay, the blockchain was necessary. And you guys kind of hit on this earlier, Tony did, when he started talking about the Internet. You know, really it's the Internet combined with the blockchain that allows us to build a verifiable system. But we also said, you know, well, we got to make sure that the people that are voting are authorized to vote, right? So the very first step in our process as a system is an identity verification step. So if you think about the ways in which you verify your identity, it's usually in three different ways, right? It's who you are. You know, your thumbprint. It could be biometric data, right? Like your thumbprint or a retina scan. It's also like what you know, right? Okay, so like creditors, you know, there's big creditors that have huge, huge data profiles on pretty much every person in the world. So, you know, they may ask, you can ask information-based questions like, you know, what car did you own in 1995 or where did you live in 2003, you know? And so they can quickly tell through a series of questions that you can verify your identity. And the third way is kind of what you have, right, like a government-issued ID. And so we developed a patent-pending process by which, you know, it's called an anonymous ballot issuance process, by which the very first step is verifying your identity. And we plan to integrate with identity verifiers, third-party identity verifiers that can provide any one of those three mechanisms, you know, of verifying people's identities. But once your identity, we have an anonymous ballot issuance process by which once your identity is verified, we have a way to register you to vote and issue you a voting key. Like whether your voting key may be L3Y5JX43, you know, and you know, big long string of alphanumeric characters, but the system will automatically generate this ID for you, and you know, Follow My Vote will not have any idea that is your voting key. The government would not know that that's your voting key. Only you are going to know that that's your voting key, and because you went through a properly, you know, our anonymous identification. I'm sorry, our anonymous ballot issuance process and had your identity verified, that voting key will be registered to vote. And so that way we can prevent people from double voting and whatnot. But so when you go and cast your vote, you won't see Linda in the ballot box. You won't see Linda's vote and who you voted for. You will see that voting key next to who you voted for. So you'll have a way to look up specifically your vote And people can actually also go independently and count your vote without realizing that that's your vote. And so that's the way that we're able to build a fully verifiable system, you know, that not only allows data to be publicly stored, but is able to protect people's identity. So that's a very, very big innovation that we came up with when designing our system. And ultimately, you know, the second problem that we talked about was security, right? And it's decentralization versus centralization. So currently, right now, the majority of data in the world is stored in centralized databases. Like I talked about a little bit earlier, you know, a lot of the voting, you know, electronic voting machines, they store data in one single database. So if it gets hacked, people can change a lot of data, and no one would be the wiser. The difference between the blockchain and these centralized systems is data stored in a decentralized way. And to clarify what I mean by that is that let's just say there's 100 servers. You know, there are 100 servers around the world that are responsible for adding new records to the blockchain or new records to the ballot box, you know, new ballots to the ballot box. Well, when the system first starts out, you know, no one has any data in the system. The very first person will take a turn and say, I got ballot number one, I'm going to add it to the blockchain. So every single person, all 99 other database admins that are block producers in the blockchain, they get a copy of that first ballot, all right? And then the next person goes, and it's the second record. So the person submitting the second record says, hey, I got a new vote to add in. And everyone says, great. Well, let's see that new vote, but you also have to show us that first vote too. So because we want to make sure that you didn't change the first vote. So literally there's a system of checks and balances where everyone has a up-to-date copy of the current state of the ballot box. And for every new record that's being added, the database admin has to submit that new record plus every other record that came before it. And so every other one of the database admins can check and make sure that they didn't change anything in the database. So it's a way, in that way, it polices itself and prevents people from going back and changing history. So really the blockchain is storing data in an irreversible way. So it can't be hacked like the centralized system. So
Adam, I know that this would be great in a perfect world.
Sure.
And when the millennials, you all grew up with technology, but my generation didn't. So
right.
How do you see this actually being something that everyone would be open to do and be able to do? Because there are also people out there that are millennials and they don't catch on to the technology. So does that prevent them from voting just because they don't understand how to vote using blockchain online? They're used to going down to the local elementary school and pulling the levers. I mean, how do you see all of that integrating?
Sure. That's a really, really great question. That's one we get asked all the time. The way that we really see this being implemented is like, look, we're not proposing that everyone be forced to vote online using the Follow My Vote voting system. What we're simply trying to do here is offer another option for people to vote. Those that feel comfortable trying out our system and using their own device to conveniently and securely cast their ballot in an election. We want to give people the opportunity to do that if they feel comfortable doing that. Think about how online shopping first started, you know, way back when. You know, I think there were a majority of people were deathly afraid of putting their credit card online into a website, you know, in fear that their information would get stolen. But there were a few brave souls out there that tried it out, and nothing bad happened. They said, okay, all right, this works for me, and you know, they told their friends, and before you knew it, more and more people started voting online. More and more people started shopping online, and now you reach today where everybody starts shopping online. And you look at Amazon; they're the biggest retailer, you know, in the world, one of the biggest retailers in the world, and they're all online. And so I think that you do really bring up a good point. There's going to be a lot of people that aren't necessarily comfortable with the technology, and that's why we're in favor of keeping the current systems in place and allowing those people that don't want to use our system to go and vote in centralized polling locations. You know, if they want to go and travel, 10 or 15 miles to their polling location, wait hours in line and cast their vote on paper, only to still be left with the question, did my vote really get counted accurately? Sure, go ahead. But if you want to try a new system, a way that, is proven to be secure and verifiable, then try our system. But we certainly don't want to force anyone to vote using our system. And another thing I'll add to that is that, we've actually, not only do we have that, innovated and developed an anonymous ballot issuance process, but another innovation that's coming out of Follow My Vote is a way by which we can prevent double voting. So let's say you do register to vote online, right? We'll be integrated with the centralized polling location, so they will know. If you register to vote online, you must vote online. And if you try to go and vote in a centralized polling location, they'll be able to see, no, you registered to vote online, I'm sorry, you're not going to be able to vote here. However, if someone does register to vote online, or even if they've already voted online and they say, I still don't trust it, I don't feel good about it, we have developed a way in which you can revoke your online vote and go to the centralized polling location, and they will be able to confirm that and therefore issue you a paper ballot for you to cast your vote in the centralized polling location. This is the same solution that prevents double voting is also our answer to voter coercion. Because a lot of people say, "Oh, if you're going to bring voting online, that means you're just going to enable voter coercion." Well, the same system that's going to allow people to revoke their vote, online vote, and go vote in the centralized polling location will be the same process by which people can thwart voter coercion.
Well, Adam, I know that Tony is listening and has some questions, and I know that there's also some really exciting things coming up that you want to share with our listeners about maybe some GoFundMe or a crowdfunding campaign. So let me turn it over to Tony because I know he's been taking notes and I know he's got some questions for you.
Sorry about that. We had a little network problem here with the computer. Anyway, Adam, a lot of information.
Sure.
And I have a lot of people asking me questions. One is, blockchain technology. I think that I know the answer to this, but explain to them what was it created for? Was it created for cryptocurrency, Bitcoin? Was it created for... what came first? Was it for voting? How did it even come about, the whole blockchain technology?
Sure. So, great question. So, blockchain technology was introduced to the world in 2009 by way of Bitcoin. So, Satoshi Nakamoto developed Bitcoin and released it to the world in 2009. And the underlying technology behind Bitcoin is blockchain technology. And for your listeners that don't know what Bitcoin is a digital cryptocurrency. It's a way to store value online via digital token. The database structure that supports Bitcoin is called blockchain technology. The reality is that since in 2009, 7 years now, the Bitcoin blockchain, since 2009, the Bitcoin blockchain has never been hacked. There has not been one successful hack attempt on the Bitcoin blockchain. Right now, there's over $6.5 billion of value stored in Bitcoin. And if you could hack Bitcoin, you'd be $6.5 billion richer. But no one has ever been able to accomplish a successful hack on the blockchain. So in 7 years, it's proven the security model behind blockchain technology has proven itself out.
Okay, so if I'm understanding correctly, because of the creation of Bitcoin, blockchain technology was developed.
That's correct.
And you've seen the loophole there that, well, not a loophole, but an opportunity there to take it to another level by using it for voting. Now, I've also heard that, like title searches for real estate purchases, they're looking at that space as well. Do you know of other areas that are looking to use blockchain technology as a resource as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so that's one of the things. You know, I think that at the end of the day, Bitcoin will be Satoshi Nakamoto, the creator of Bitcoin, will be more remembered for blockchain technology, for introducing blockchain technology itself to the world as opposed to Bitcoin. Because when people learned about blockchain technology and how it works underneath Bitcoin, they said, well, wait a minute. This is a fundamentally different way to store data. And it's not just about, you know, finance or storing digital currency online, but there are a lot of different applications that blockchain technology could be applied to. You know, voting is just one of the no-brainer, right? I mean, anytime you're trying to store data in an irreversible way, you know, the blockchain makes sense. So a voting, a ballot box, okay, you don't want the data to be changed inside of a ballot box, okay, so that's perfect. But another thing, there's a lot of other applications. Like, for instance, the government is looking into ways to track title of ownership, you know, over deeds, over lands, like DMV records, you know, owning your title of your car and things like that. There's also, you know, organizations out there that are trying to do any, like, counterfeit measures with respect to art and art dealers. I mean, that's a multi-billion-dollar business. A fraud with respect to art is a huge, huge problem. Counterfeit, you know, artwork being created and sold and passed off as real. So there are certain you know, even prescription drugs, you know, things like that. You know, there are projects out there that are trying to make sure that when a drug is created or an original artwork is created, there is a clean transfer of title of ownership. So that people can be assured that what they're getting is the real deal, and so that's just another application. There are people creating Open Bazaar just launched. I mean, it's a whole digital marketplace online where people are selling products, those transactions are being secured in the blockchain. So blockchain, really, we're only just really starting to experiment with all types of applications that could fundamentally change the way our world works. You know, people have been comparing blockchain technology right now to, like, the internet in the early 90s. You know, it's that big of a deal, and we're only now just starting to see some of the ways that blockchain technology is going to change our life. But, you know, it's my belief that blockchain technology will fundamentally change the way this world works in some really exciting ways.
So if I'm understanding correctly, the easy understanding of it is that this is going to create a more secure way of things being done. I mean, so many things are hacked nowadays. People are stealing identities and stuff like that. So this will be a more of a secure way of allowing things not to be hacked. Correct?
Right, exactly. And you mentioned a good point, identity management. That's going to be something big that's going to be on the blockchain. Reputation management. These are things, you're absolutely right. It's a much more, it brings security and transparency where needed to our lives, you know?
Mm.
So, yeah.
Okay.
It's huge.
Time goes fast, Adam, and tons of information, and we're going to have you back on the show because there's tons more information. But I want to touch on something quickly here before we run out of time. Your website, followmyvote.com, gives a lot of information, and I've been posting it all over social media as you and Linda were discussing different things. One of the things I want to make sure to touch on is you have a Kickstarter going on, and I want people to understand how they can be more involved in that, how they can learn more from you. I think that the more knowledge gained, the more opportunity will come to support what you're doing. So tell people how they can get involved with that piece of it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. So we had just launched on April 13th, in honor of Thomas Jefferson. He was born on April 13th. We launched a crowdfunding campaign on Kickstarter. You know, we have recently converted to a public benefit corporation, and Kickstarter and themselves are a public benefit corporation. So really what you have is two public benefit corporations coming together and trying to fund the solution to bring honest and transparent elections to governments worldwide. We're really positioning this as our gift to humanity. I mean, we are a millennial company, you know, of the people, by the people, for the people. And we're really targeting millennials with this. You can go to our website, and you can see right on our homepage, if you scroll down just a tad, you'll see prominently featured link to our Kickstarter campaign. But we're looking to raise $3.2 million. Now, and I know it seems like a lot of money, but it's a fraction of the money that's being poured into our elections today. I mean, you're going to have, you know, each candidate by the end of it is going to have at least $1 billion of invested in their campaigns. And we're talking not even a percent of that could go to funding, an honest, verifiable voting system for the world. And millennials is really what we're targeting. You know, there's just been studies that have just been released that, you know, there are 92 million millennials in the United States alone. And if you think about that figure, $3.2 million, if we were to just get 1% of millennials in the United States to contribute $5 or more to our campaign, we would get this campaign funded. So really what we're doing is we're asking people to make a sacrifice. You know, Follow My Vote, the core team of Follow My Vote is sacrificing our lives to bring about the solution to the world. But, you know, we've run out of money. I've poured my life savings into this, cashed out my 401k, and maxed out my credit cards. You know, we're very, very close, but we need the people to push it the rest of the way. And, you know, we're asking them just to make a sacrifice, you know, $5, you know, skip that Starbucks coffee or pass on that glass of wine or that beer for a night, you know, and put your money towards something the world needs now more than ever. And the reality is the world needs this, not just the United States, the world needs. I've been traveling throughout Europe, all over the world, really, over the past couple months. And when they find out what I'm doing, I tell them about our voting system. They say, oh, my God, they grab me. And they say, my country needs your voting system. Our elections here are so corrupt. And that's one thing that, you know, Trump, we've been talking about the elections. You know, Trump has kind of brought the light. I mean, he's out there right now hitting the campaign trail saying elections are rigged, you know. A system like ours is, whether you believe elections are rigged or not, a system like ours is one way to prove that they're not. This is a global movement, and we really want the world to take part in this and fund this for a better future for all.
Well, I agree. It's going to take a while. It's just the start of a lot of things coming forward. I know at your age you're going to see a lot more of it at the end of time than I am. But I'm excited about it because, well, a few things. One is, you know, we're moving into a different type of currency. I mean, the Bitcoin, the cryptocurrency, there's 600-700 different companies creating coins. The technology that was created from that is being able to be used in a number of different areas of business, and some jobs are going to be lost from it and some jobs are going to be created from it, but times keep moving forward. So I think this is a really unique time of our lives where we can make the step to the next generation, at least for me anyway. But there's a lot of knowledge not known, and there's a lot of people that don't understand or even care to understand this. So reality of this is I know it's starting now, especially after this election, whoever wins because of the candidates involved, there's going to be multiple amounts of people that are unhappy. So it might be something that will get recognized because just of who's there to vote for. But the thing of it is, what do you see this long term? Is it 5 years, 10 years, 20 years reality where it's an everyday language, unlike what it is right now?
When you see it, when it's an everyday language, what do you mean by it specifically?
So when we talk about blockchain,
okay.
You know, people look at you like, what is that? And then if you look on the internet and you see Bank of America tried to buy up 38 patents for blockchain technology and were successful with 13. Well, Bank of America allows them to think of it something, okay, I need to read this. But if you and I say, hey, look up blockchain technology, they're like, yeah, okay, bye. So when it becomes more of a familiar term.
Right. Well, I get, thank you. So, yeah, I think, and that's the greatest thing about our project is that it's simple enough for people, you know, if you can take a few minutes, you know, if you can give me a few minutes of your time, voting is a simple enough application of blockchain technology where I can explain it in a way that makes sense to you and that you can get it. You can see the value of blockchain technology, understand why it's important and what it could do. And the reality is we've been traveling the world over the last year and a half educating people, going to conferences and talking to press and having these type of interviews that we're having today and just talking to people and letting people know that, hey, blockchain technology is here. When we first started talking about blockchain technology, nobody knew what we were saying. You know, like, they're blockchain? Huh? I don't know what that is. Tell me more. Well, now when we go and talk to conferences and we talk to people, it's about a 50-50 breakdown of people that know about blockchain technology and don't. So in a year and a half, the word is spreading. And I think when you talk about an application like Follow My Vote, it becomes, like I said, the how blockchain technology works and the valuable aspects of blockchain become very easily to understand. So I think it's going to take that one application that gets enough proliferation and use among the masses to where it brings the conversation, you know, into, you know, to the dinner tables, and people start talking about blockchain technology. And, you know, I'll end with this, that, you know, we were just featured in Huffington Post, and, you know, they did a huge article on blockchain technology, the distributed ledger technology. You know, are you ready? You know, was the big question. And they featured several different projects that are going on right now today that feature blockchain technology. And at the very end of the article, they mentioned, you know, they said probably one of the most interesting things in blockchain technology as a whole is in the elections business. And they went on to talk about Follow My Vote and a parallel election. That's another thing I'd love to mention very, very quickly, is that we're launching, to demonstrate our technology, we're launching a mock election in parallel to the 2016 election, so that anyone that wants to experience what voting will be like in the future, they can come to our website, followmyvote.com, and they can register for a parallel election and be able to vote in our system. Now, we're encouraging people to go vote in the normal system, go vote in the official system, and so your vote can get counted, but also take a few minutes out of your day and try out Follow My Vote's parallel election so you can see what voting will be like in the future. And we're going to introduce concepts like early voting and being able to change your vote in the days leading up to the election so we can really see who's got support early on from the people. And at the end of the day, before the election closes, you know, where the people, you know, where the most support really stands for the candidates among the people. So it's going to be a very, very exciting thing. And Huffington Post wrote about it. And they thought that you know, the parallel election was a brilliant idea. And again, it's going to be another way to bring the conversation into the mainstream to talk about blockchain technology and all the uses that it could provide, you know, humanity as a whole, really.
Well, Adam, I'm sorry to say we're way up against the clock here, and your time today has been very, very valuable to us. We thank you so much for allowing our listeners to learn more about it. I want to make mention one more time that they need to go to followmyvote.com to learn more. Can they contact you by email as well?
Absolutely. If you're interested in learning more about our project or how you personally can get involved, email me at adam@followmyvote.com.
Well, Adam, thank you so much for your time today. We look forward to reaching out to you off the air to learn more and just to try to help you promote what you're doing. We're real excited about this new way of life coming down the road. So thanks again for your time.
Tony, Linda, thank you so much for the opportunity today. I look forward to keep the conversation going.
Absolutely, Adam.
All right, folks, we're going to take a short break and come back. And, well, you know, Lynn, I don't think we have time for a short break, so let's do this. Let's just do a fast recap. We learned today about a lot of things, and there was a lot of information, so I hope people will go back and listen to the recording of this again, because there's a lot of information to take in. And Adam made mention that the conferences are getting to understand it more and more. But there's a lot more people that don't go to the conference than that do go to the conference. So there's a bigger crowd to educate. So if you can take time out to listen to this, or go to followmyvote.com and learn more about what Adam is doing with his company, you would be able to help explain it to others. You'd be able to get involved in it and learn more about it as well. So I hope you'll take that time out to do it. Lynn, give us a nugget you got from this today.
You know, Tony, I didn't realize that, you know, that so much of the absentee voting was lost. It didn't occur to me, but when you think about it, it makes sense that people send their votes in through the mail, but so much mail is lost. And you don't know whether when you put that stamp on your absentee vote and you drop it into the mailbox, if it's actually going to make it. You think it has, but, you know, it just never occurred to me. So that's really not accurate. So that was a great point that he brought up there.
Yeah. There's, you know, we learn every week. There's so many things that slip through our fingers that we don't know about. And that's the power of doing a radio show or, you know, a podcast or, you know, weekly interviews of any sort with people that are experts in the industry. It allows you to learn more. And, you know, we've been blessed to be able to take an hour out of our week every week and learn from more people. I can remember 4 or 5 months ago, we didn't even know what blockchain was, what it was for. We were just introduced to cryptocurrency. We didn't know anything about that, and we're still not experts on it, but we sure are blessed to be able to interview so many experts in that industry. So once again, I want to say thank you to Adam Earnest for being our guest today. And, you know, Lynn, we're up against the clock, so I want to make sure everybody knows this. Tune in next week to our show. You can tune in every week. From 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time. Next week's guest is going to be a gentleman by the name of Craig Smalley. And, well, we're going to find out more about him next week. Just make sure to stay tuned to us. Well, he's another guy in the financial world taking the cryptocurrency steps to use it for things that we're not thinking of, okay? I mean, he was with the IRS. There's a lot of things, you know, taxes, all kinds of things that we're going to learn more about with cryptocurrency. So I hope you'll stay tuned next week. And, Linda, thanks for taking time out of there in Portland to join us today. And once again, a big thanks to Adam Earnest.
You've been listening to Cryptopreneurs Radio, brought to you by the Tough Talk Radio Network. If you'd like more information about this show, please visit CryptopreneursRadio.com.